Welcome to the Zen Stoic Path. On this episode, we have a very special guest joining us, somebody that I am honored to bring on this show. We have Mike Barnhill. Mike is one of the owners of a company called Specialist ID, as well as the creator of the Hydra Fighter Band. Now, Mike is a successful business owner who is also deeply passionate about music and has gotten back into his creative endeavors, his passions, in his 40s in a very unique and powerful way. This conversation is extremely inspiring, especially for those who want to achieve success, who want to live a life where they're conquering ambitious goals while also being joyful and doing the things that are truly meaningful and that they love. Mike's way of living is about optimizing joy and embracing connection with others. And I am so excited for you to listen to this episode. We talk about all kinds of things, especially the importance that creativity and enthusiasm plays in a life that is liberated. Let's get into the show. Mike Barnhill, this has been a long time coming, and I'm super stoked to have you here on the podcast. You've been an amazing client of mine through the years, an amazing friend, and an inspiration to see everything that you've built, especially since you and I have met. I think it's been absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, like, we're looking at your studio right now where Hydra Fighter was born, and I'm so stoked to have you on the show, man.
Dude, I thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. And I was looking over my notes of our work together. I worked with you for 3 years.
Yeah.
So many things changed over the time we worked together. So many things that I wanted to do and become and create. I owe so much to you, my friend. So thank you. And it's an honor to be here, my buddy.
Amazing. Well, thank you for the kind words, brother. It was a co-creation that I was very grateful to be a part of through that journey. And I think it's so cool, just like I said, looking at it now, like, you have your whole studio set up. I know that you have your band Hydra Fighter, which I think is so cool to see it from the inception to its evolution today. And I think, you know, for the audience, one thing that you really are exemplary of is a person who shows that it's never too late to do what you truly love and what you're passionate about. I remember for us, when we began, you were working really hard in your business. You hadn't really been into your music for a long time. And then in your 40s, you pick back up and you, like, you hit the ground running, man, like, you sprinted with it. So I thought that was so cool. And I'm curious, like, for you, from your perspective, what is the importance of the role that creativity plays in your life? Because you're successful in business, you do great there, but there was this thing that was really beckoning to you when it came to the music. So what's the role of creativity and how it plays a role in your life as a father, as a business owner, as a man?
Man, creativity. It's quite the buzzword these days. It's quite, in my opinion, the thing to prioritize. I feel like creativity makes all the other things in life so much better. And even in things like business, like, all great business comes from a place of creativity, you know? And so thinking of creativity as an essential, not as a nice to have or a nice to do, and saying, wait a second, this is actually a priority, because all the good things in the world come from an origin that we create somehow. It's a place of creativity, you know, from Think and Grow Rich, where you look out at every object that man has created, and it's all, you know, it's of value, but it's all of creativity at the first part. So I just think that creativity is a necessity and not a luxury. So, yeah.
Dude, that's beautiful. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I feel like, you know, there's, especially in the personal development world, when it's, you know, or we're talking about, like, hustle culture, and they're always talking about the importance of discipline and working hard and showing up and being consistent. And all those things are important, yes. But one thing that I've realized lately is that without enthusiasm ends up becoming very rigid, right? It almost, like, sucks the life out of you. And by bringing that creativity in, like you said, like, the origin of everything that we hold dear in life comes from that place of creativity. So I think it's really fascinating the way that you have woven those two things together. I know you have a very powerful daily ritual called sitting in the producer's chair. And I would love if you shared what that is and, like, how that has changed your day-to-day experience.
Oh man, you remembered that. Sitting in the producer's chair. Yes. Yeah, there's so many notes I have from all of our sessions together. And that was one of the ones that really stuck out. That was one of those co-creation moments where, well, let me just tell you what sitting in the producer's chair is. And that is, before starting any other endeavor, whether it's work or emails or phone calls or talking to my wife about a home project, it is to sit in this chair, which is right here, but it can be anywhere. But it is the place to go and create. And to sit there for about an hour, let's say 30 minutes. Let's not put too much pressure on ourselves. To sit there for 30 minutes a day and begin to produce whatever it is that we feel compelled to produce at the time. So for me, it's been music and recording. And I know when we started really getting into doing the creative thing and the music thing, I hadn't recorded anything in years. I hadn't sat behind a keyboard, a musical keyboard, and made music and recorded it and tracked it until this idea of the producer chair and sitting as a discipline, sitting in the producer chair became a priority. And it became the first thing to do. Because if I say, oh, I've got so much to do today, I've got so much work, I've got so many family obligations, once I'm done with those things, I'll go and I'll create. I'll do that later. Well, later goes on forever. And the actual creation never happens. But when you flip it around, and you say, the first thing that I do as a priority is I sit in a producer chair. I don't know what I'm going to create. I don't know what's going to happen. But today I'm going to make some music, or I'm going to record some music, or I'm going to write some lyrics, or whatever it is. And just to sit there and just sit in the chair and let what's going to happen, happen. So many moments that just feel so powerful have come from just those, that discipline sitting in the chair, you know, and Rick Rubin talks about it. Pressfield talks about it, just sitting down and doing the work, you know, almost as a craftsman. Mm-hmm. The angels come and sit on your shoulders and they sing through you.
That gives me chills, Ben, just listening to that, because I know, like, I see you light up. I can hear it in your voice. I mean, just the resonance when you describe this ritual, this routine that you have for yourself is when you sit in that producer's chair, you're sitting down to do what is most important to you, the thing that makes you feel alive, the thing that nourishes your soul. And sitting there each and every morning, you get to essentially prime the day from this place of creation. And I love that you mentioned Stephen Pressfield, because his book, The War of Art, was a game changer for me. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs, creatives, musicians who that book was very, very impactful for. For you, I mean, you're doing the very thing that he shares in that book, which is to sit down and do the work against all resistance that might come up. Like you said, later goes on forever. But if you give yourself that time, you protect that time, you make it sacred, it changes the whole course of your day and ultimately your life, right? You come from this place of aliveness rather than obligation.
Absolutely. And that aliveness you bring into all the other aspects of your life. I feel like if you sit in the producer chair, you do your art, you make it a priority, there isn't an end of a day that comes by where you will ever say, or I will ever say, oh, today sucked. I never got around to what was meaningful, you know, because that one thing was done. And I think that one thing that was done impacts everything else positively. I think if I'm making time, and this isn't just me, but other artists and creatives I've known have said, you know, a great way to be a better husband is to make some music. A great way to be a better father is to make some music. A great way to be a better worker among workers is to make a little music, you know, because that part of you, that part of me, it needs to be fed, and it needs to, it just needs to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that the generation of energy in our systems and doing things that actually have us feeling energized is so important. It reminds us of like why we are doing all the work. We're working hard in our businesses, our careers in the first place. It's so that we can feel this feeling that comes from sitting and doing something that is truly meaningful to you, something that is special to you, that is near and dear to your heart. Now, one of the things I'm curious about is with Hydro Fighter, number one, because I know the backstory, but I would love to hear it again as well as to share it with the audience. What inspired that name, and what does Hydro Fighter mean to you?
Yeah, man. Well, actually, it was sitting and doing some work on creating a name and creating some connection through other musicians through your guidance that came, that led to the name Hydro Fighter. So the first thing that we were talking about, a Gary V method of communicating with people online, where it was you're giving more than you're taking. And so in doing such, I was, you know, I was just kind of connecting with different bands that I loved. And this band called Brother Bird, one of my favorite bands in the world, I was connecting with them. And the name Brother Bird, I was like, I love that. Something so simple about Brother Bird, you know, just what it created in my mind. And there's like a little symbolism, and there's, you know, something tangible in that bird, and in that brother, that kind of connection. And I was reading this book called How to Fight a Hydra, which I don't know if you've read it. Have you read it yet?
I've seen the book. I've not read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's great. So it's written by a business author. I forgot what his name is, but he wrote some great business books. But he had a book called How to Fight a Hydra. It's basically a parable. It's when you're beyond business and you're just, I'm business and I'm hustle. There's that part of you that says, there's more. And it calls me. And I don't know why it calls me, but it calls me. And so How to Fight a Hydra is it's a parable about a blacksmith who's, town is tormented by this Hydra monster, not a dragon, not a lion, but a Hydra. And a Hydra is unique in that you cut off a head and another head grows, two more heads grow. The battle's never over, you know, but in the process of this book, he becomes a Hydra fighter. He's no longer just a blacksmith, and the value that he brings to his community and his identity becomes around the slayer of this Hydra, the only person that can protect his town from this Hydra tormentor. And that's what I connected with musically as we were talking. It's called me for years. It's never left me. It's tormented me. I've been the blacksmith. I've been a successful blacksmith, a business owner, right? That's the metaphor. And there's always something more, but the way this Hydra fighter's identity and relationship to its community transitioned through the process of becoming a Hydra fighter, I just love that, because it's like a never ending quest to connect truer and deeper, not within yourself, within your God or your higher power, and within your community. And as a musician, literally just popped in my head, Hydra fighter, like that's it. And I'd always wanted to name a band after a book, and I finally did.
That's so cool, man. Thank you for sharing that story. And I actually got to learn more of like the depth of that story and what it really means to you, especially that metaphor with the blacksmith and how you see yourself. You like, you are that blacksmith, the accomplished business owner, yet there is still something more that calls to you, that inspires you, that it wants you to connect to something larger than yourself. And you do that through your music, and you can hear it in the song lyrics that you sing and a lot of your songs, right? I love listening to your stuff on YouTube. I think it's awesome. And it's so cool to know who you were before those songs, during, and then after, and like just seeing like the whole timeline go has just been, you know, such an honor to watch. And one question that I have for you, because those songs, much of them give me chills every time I'm listening to them. And my question for you is, As a creator of this music, what is it that you want listeners to feel, or what do you envision them feeling or experiencing while they listen to your music that you create with Hydra Fighter?
Man, that's such a cool question. And I just remembered I had printed something out from the other day, kind of about that. Let me dance around that question real quick. And that I was in bands my whole life growing up. You know, I was in punk rock bands and heavy metal bands and angry bands and sad bands. And what struck me was when the Hydra Fighter concept kind of came to, it was that all that was behind me. The musician was not behind me, but the next stage of musicianship needed a new name. It needed a new identity, you know, and that's what really connected me to that Hydra Fighter name. It was a moving forward in my 40s, you know, not moving back and saying, look at who I used to be, look at what I used to do. It was a new thing where the lyrics needed to connect to middle-aged people, you know, songs about middle-aged love or loving your child so much and feeling pain and their disconnection with their friends. You know, like it was just all those things that were really true. And it was no longer about, you know, getting drunk and getting in fights and all of the things that my songs have been about for years. It was really about being comfortable being a middle-aged man, going through middle-aged man's concerns about gun violence and COVID and all that fucking shit that was going on. Sorry for my language at the time.
No. Language away.
I didn't know how to process. And so it gave me a voice to once again process pain and connection and just desperation. And see who else might feel that way. So let me read real quick. This is my purpose articulated that I'm sure came from one of our calls. And it is that my dream gives others permission to get excited about their dream. That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
My music is a public confession that allows others to realize that they are not alone in their suffering and pain. Because I'm vulnerable and sensitive, but also strong, I have a unique opportunity to relate to others and inspire and guide them so that they can love themselves regardless of their environment, temporary pain, setbacks, or circumstances. I can scale hope. I am in the business of scaling hope through artistic expression, honesty, and work. Yeah, it goes on, but that was the gist of it.
That's beautiful. Scaling hope. Never thought about that idea before, but it is a very powerful one. So for you, what does hope mean to you? And what is the role in our society, in our world of scaling hope? Like, what is that? What do you feel like that does? Or what's the thing that you envision with that?
I feel like it's so easy to scale negativity. You know, you can just go online and bitch about shit, right? And that scales, you know? Telling your wife or your kid or your friends that you love them, it can scale a bit because it can bring a little love into their world that they might want to pass on. But to really get out there and talk about the good and to talk about the bad, but from a place of, I'm trying to figure this out. I'm trying to improve. I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to inspire others to get better at the same time. Like, that's how we scale hope. I don't know if you've ever run a marathon or a half marathon or a 5K. But man, you go there and there's kids cheering for their moms. There's husbands cheering for their wives. There's random strangers cheering for everybody. And to me, that's like a scaling of hope. Everyone's on the same page trying to get better. You know, when you go online, you don't get that same sort of reinforcement for encouragement. You know, it's almost, and I don't want to be too disparaging, but it's almost like, well, how could you be so happy? Don't you see the pain in the world? Yeah, I see the pain of the world. And I want to tell my firsthand experience of that pain. So maybe somebody else feels a little bit less alone, you know, but also I want to share the good, man. I want to be sharing the good as much as possible because, you know, I come from all the same bullshit that people who suffer come from, right? I'm 18 years sober now, you know, and that's not a pat on the back thing. I've been through the darkness and come out the other side. And when we share our darkness and we shine a light, you know, to maybe kind of show the way back to somebody else, maybe I'm getting too esoteric and too crazy right now.
I don't know.
But I really feel like sharing the good and the bad together is how we scale hope, because that's how we really connect.
Again, chills. I mean, you're touching on a very profound concept of integrating the shadows. And this is something that we do on an individual level, right? We did this a lot in coaching. This is something that I'll bring all clients through, is integrating the shadow. Because it's as Carl Jung once said, that until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate. And if we try to keep all these things down and not talk about them, not share our experience, they end up taking us over unconsciously, right? Which is much sneakier and less overt and harder to actually figure out what's going on when things are unconscious, because by definition, we are not aware of their existence. And this idea of you talking about the darkness, but from a perspective of hope and spreading the good and spreading those ideas and interweaving them, showing listeners and showing people who are in proximity to you the all of it. Not overemphasizing one or the other, but really and truly coming from this perspective of weaving the two in and integrating both the shadow and the light. Because in that is where we create that alignment, that congruency. And I had written something a few weeks ago where I was talking about the idea of kintsugi, like this bowl over here. I don't think you can see it in the view that we're in, but
is that the goal where you rebuild it with gold?
Yes.
Yes.
This idea, kintsugi. And like what you're talking about really embodies this idea. And I think one of the cool things about it is I was writing this in a journal, and I was writing about kintsugi specifically. And I was saying that better is the unity that is returned to from a place of separation. And this idea that better is the light that we find through the darkness, because then we have this experience of binding it with gold, binding it with this wisdom, this joy, this satisfaction and fulfillment of going through the journey of life itself. And it sounds like your music really is capturing the essence of this kintsugi, because you're empathizing with the people that you are making this music for. You're making this music for yourself. You're scratching your own itch and simultaneously giving empathy to those who are experiencing middle age concerns, feelings, ideas, doubts, and bringing hope into that. Like seeing people where they're at and then bringing them to where they need to be or where they want to be in terms of how they feel inside. So at least that's my interpretation of what you're sharing here. Am I on base at all?
You're so right. And I love you brought up the kintsugi. I've loved that artistic concept for so long. You know, there's this great quote, and I don't even remember what it was, but I heard it years ago and it really rung true to me. And that was, it is those of us that have strayed from the path and found our way back that can help others to find their way to the path. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this song during COVID. I was trying to help this guy out the same way I'd been helped out before. And I wrote this song called The Torch, and I'll just sing it's my next single, just to plug it. Actually, it'll be coming out in a couple months or whatever, but it's written, recorded. It sounds beautiful, but it's called The Torch. And it's just about the same torch that we use to burn everything down, you know, in our shadow, is the same torch that we can use to light the way for somebody else. And the lyrics go like this. It's the chorus, and it goes, we'd cursed this life, swore we were forged in fire, but it lit the torch that gave us the light to help us find our way back home. And I love the metaphor of the torch. And actually, in the Hydra fighter story, he's carrying a sword and he's carrying a torch. The sword is to chop off the head of the Hydra, and the torch is to seal it so it can't come back. But I love the idea of the torch that we've used to burn things down now being used to show the light to others. Because fire can be both destructive and illuminating.
Beautiful. Yeah, I've been meditating a lot on this idea of the inner fire, right? The eternal flame of aliveness, I guess we could call it that. And how, especially with regard to the emotion of anger, and I've been doing this kind of like exploration of like, what are the virtues of our perceived negative emotions? And one thing that I found with anger is a really interesting one, because it gets demonized in society. And the outer expression of anger, of what we see to be this ugly, dark, destructive thing, is actually its mirror opposite of what is actually underneath the surface in the internal world. And it's the deepest form of love and care for ourselves, our bodies, our sense of belonging, the people that we love, and the world itself. And it's like this energy that gives us this raw sense of powerlessness, that we can't always protect and control everything that we love and hold dear. And so in the inability to hold that perceived powerlessness, that rawness, it can come out in ways that are not desirable. However, very much like fire, anger, I always say that anger is the spirit of fire is anger from on an emotional level. And that fire is the same fire that can start a wildfire if it's wielded unintentionally, or it can be the fire that lights up our homes, powers our vehicles, cooks our food, and or even serves as a symbol for people to bond over in a campfire. And so it's like being able to exercise these feelings, these experiences through music seems like just such a powerful medium for you to, again, honor that which is within you and share it in a way that people feel seen, heard, and understood.
100%, man. Fire is fuel, you know? Yeah. It is fuel. Yeah. I love what you said.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, thank you. One question I had, because we were talking about Kintsugi, so you know, this is the Zen Stoic path. we talk about these philosophies, and I know that even before our work together, I know you had read quite a bit of Stoicism and studied some of these philosophies. What have the certain philosophies, Zen Stoicism, or even philosophies outside of that, what role have they played in your mindset and in your journey out of your own darkness?
I would honestly say the Stoic Marcus Aurelius has been one of the biggest helps for me. And that's why when I met you, I loved that you knew so much and were able to quote so much beautiful Stoicism. For me, I feel like Stoicism and Marcus Aurelius in particular is a non-religious pursuit of the truth. I have no problems with religion. I love religion, but I also like to see just the pure holiness in what is just claimed to be humanity, right? No one ever said Marcus Aurelius is a god or a deity or whatever, but he's a seeker of truth. And so much of what I read in him speaks to me and speaks to my soul the same way that a religious text might, but without any sort of other connotations. And so I guess as a seeker, there's a lot of peace for me and a lot of solace in the words of Marcus Aurelius in particular. And I can share them freely with friends who are atheists or agnostics and not feel like I'm pushing or pressuring or bringing up any sort of prejudice. It's just beautiful humanity and beautiful truth. And so I love that about the Stoics and Marcus Aurelius in particular, especially Meditations.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Meditations, I mean, is a profound text. It was actually, what was interesting is something you said in one of our sessions, and this was years ago. So like, not sure how I remember it, but it was clearly important because it stuck. But you said something in one of our sessions that I always found to be profound, which had me slow down and appreciate at an even deeper level Marcus Aurelius's work. And not only his work, but it kind of gave me a different perspective over other philosophers as well. And you said it's one of those books, we're talking about Meditations here, that Marcus Aurelius Meditations is one of those books that I can read one page and be completely like immersed in it and mesmerized by the words on a single page. And I can read one page a night, and that's like, that'll suffice. And
I can't read any more than that.
Yeah.
75% of each page is highlighted, and I'm thinking for 90% of the time I spend in that chair when I read Meditations. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And it, dude, I've had a very similar experience. I have like three copies of Meditations. I have two physical copies, and I have one on Kindle, or I might have two on Kindle at this point. But the one that I have on Kindle, I have it on my iPad, on like the Kindle app. And mm-hmm. Kindle literally didn't let me highlight anymore. It's like, you have reached your maximum.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. On one of my rounds through it, it's like, you've reached your limit. I was like, okay.
I didn't even know that would be a possible thing.
I didn't know either, but it stopped me from continuing to highlight the book. It's like you
may be the only person that's ever reached the maximum capacity of highlighting on a Kindle.
Probably, but it's because of every, like Marcus Aurelius, he was spitting that hot fire. Like, I mean, what was profound is the fact that that was never intended to be a book in the first place. That was his journal, his personal thoughts and his reflections on life and how he used his philosophy to guide him. And one of the things I really love about Marcus Aurelius is this idea of returning to our nature as human beings and like just living off these fundamental principles of what it is to be human. And one of the things that I think you said that was really interesting is like, it's not a religious text, and even like somebody who is an atheist can appreciate what is being told in meditations. And I think one of the reasons is because it brings us back to our humanity. And there's another book that I really like called, I was just looking over at my bookshelf. It's there now. It's called The Way of Zen by Alan Watts. And one of the things that he says in that is, to be Zen is to be perfectly and simply human. It's not pretending to be an angel or a demon or a saint or a sinner. It's to be perfectly and simply human. Eat when you're hungry, sit when you want to sit, sleep when you're tired. And I think both philosophies, like Marcus Aurelius' words, as well as that sentiment, bring us back into this experience of just being human, just being alive here and now.
Dude, you're the person that introduced me to Alan Watts, and I thank you for that. And so much of trying to figure out how to be a good human is saying, you've done enough. It is time to sit and eat. It is time to eat when you're hungry. It is time to sit. I have a therapist I work with every now and then, and he says, sometimes it's okay to be tired and let everything go. It's called emotional exhaustion. Maybe you're not lazy at all. Maybe you're emotionally exhausted. And to giving, I think one of the hardest things to do in our success culture, for me at least, and I've improved quite a bit, is to give permission to be okay. You know, whether it is to say creativity is important, I'll spend time doing that. Running is important. I'll spend time doing that. I'm tired. I'm going to take a nap. Holy shit. Like, it's okay to be a non-perfect human. Yeah, man.
I mean, I think that's the whole essence of it, right? It's what allows us to be alive. And sometimes it's just surrendering into the human experience itself and not living in our, I guess, idealized version of it. Of like, oh, I got to work X amount of hours and I need to produce this much money in the business and I need to, you know, get these kinds of reviews on my products and all kinds of things that at the end of the day, these metrics are exciting when you hit them for about a couple days, maybe, and then you're right back into whatever else it was that you were doing. And one book that has really riveted me in this like line of thinking has been, one that's called The Tao of Solomon. Have you read it before?
You recommended it and I have not read it yet.
Yeah. So this one, I mean, it speaks to exactly what you just said. It's like not losing ourselves in just this like perfected, idealized abstraction of life, but realizing where some of those really important moments are in life of just like, yeah, when you're tired, just like lay down and rest, like be tired. That's fine. Mm. Like, it's not wrong. It's not a flaw to be exhausted. It's actually part of being alive is to expend energy and realize like, oh, I've expended energy. Now I can chill. Now I can sit down. Now I can like lay down and not having to justify it with these things or not having to tell yourself that it's wrong, but just embracing human flaws or what we call flaws for what they are and just embracing that sense of being.
Dude, brother, you are so right. And when you give yourself the chance to just kind of sink into that thing, you know, the things that come out of that following that humanity are amazing. And I'll give a quick anecdote. And it's before the Hydra Fighter, before all of the music stuff started to happen, before this music studio that I'm sitting in right now, that I never would have thought my wife would approve, but she actually encouraged me to build after we had envisioned it together, you and I. But I was sitting in my office, my office over there, and it was when I was really just driven for the work, driven for the productivity, driven for the money, driven for the number, for the goalpost that just kept on moving. And I remember I had this goal forever to hit $1 million a month. And every month I'd check the numbers and every month I was just short, you know? And I remember looking at the computer screen. For whatever reason, I looked at it. It said 959,000. And I just go, fuck this. And in that moment, I had an existential crisis because for almost a year, I'd been chasing this $1 million a month as a goal, which is a good goal. It's a great goal. Kept me working, kept me motivated. But there, and I looked at this Inc. 5,000 fastest growing companies poster I had on the wall from where we'd hit it, you know, a couple times. And I remember just being sunk. Like all of a sudden, my heart sunk and I said, what am I doing this for? Like, who cares? Who the fuck cares? And it was an existential crisis. And I left my computer. I started crying. And because I just knew that I need to work. I need to provide. I need to do that stuff. But I had been putting all my effort into this damn number, you know, and it didn't really matter. And it was very soon after that some things went down and I didn't know how to process them. And I wrote that song, A Moderate Anthem, which ended up becoming the first Hydra Fighter song. And you and I talked about some very, very deep things. And that was what led me to writing that song called A Moderate Anthem, which was the birth of the Hydra Fighter. Like, that was the birth right there. And it only came because I was so frustrated and so done with this $1 million a month number that was so hollow, and moved to the meaningful things. And it was through our relationship and our conversations that so many things started to really be co-created, you know, from the name to the first song. To the first song was about a school shooting, and it wasn't about like, I'm there and I'm watching the school shooting. It was nothing like that. And I know that you've had school shooting things in your past, you know, from a town that we both are very familiar with and where you grew up. And we talked deeply about some things, and I was trying to process where I felt. And what I felt was just this frustration with how political sides were weaponizing these children's experience. And that was where the song came from, you know, from what I truly, truly felt. And that was the frustration with humanity. The darker side of humanity is people on different political sides try to weaponize these poor children's experience. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had an authentic voice as the song poured out of me, you know, that, and I was needing to sing about things that, you know, from a perspective that was true and others didn't, you know, sing from that perspective, at least not that I'd heard. And so it was, you know, it was a lot of things that were going really shitty, you know, that became kind of the foundation for something beautiful, you know, beautiful. And so, you know, I want to thank you for being a huge, enormous part of so many steps along that thing to where now it feels like it's just humming along and I couldn't live without it. And I'm just so glad that it's a big part of my life, you know?
Dude, thank you for sharing that, man. That really warms my heart to hear that. And it was an honor being part of that process. And again, seeing it continue and seeing you just like run with it. And thank you for sharing that story as well. Right. And the depth of emotion that you experienced in that, because that was you basically taking that fire and channeling it into something bright, something that lit the darkness that was, you know, occurring at that time or with those situations, especially with those school shootings. And I remember that conversation, right? Because that was when my former high school had a school shooting. Yeah. And it was a deep conversation, and it's also beautiful to see on the other side a creation that you birthed from the well of emotion that you experienced there. And one of the things that I think is fascinating about your process and the story that you shared about really like striving for that $1 million a month and then realizing not that it was a bad goal, because it was a great goal, it was ambitious, but realizing the futility with regard to like your actual well-being or sense of meaning and purpose in life. And in that moment where you broke down, like you just had this moment of surrender. And I realized that a lot of my biggest breakthroughs, and I'm sure some of yours, have been in moments of like surrendering an exhausted iteration of yourself and like shedding it like an old skin and then just embracing what came through in that moment.
Yeah. 100%. 100%, my bro.
Yeah. One of the things I got to ask you about, because I think this is, for me, this is such an inspiration, especially as somebody who aspires to be a father. I see you with your son and I see you guys jamming out. I see him ripping it on the drums. What is that? What's that like for you? Because it's not just that you're making the music for people who are experiencing a similar phase of life that you are, right? Like middle life, like in their 40s, where you're talking about like the love for your kids and like some of the pain and the concerns that you have in these moments. So what's it like creating the music with one of your biggest inspirations, like right there in the studio with you?
Yes. Yes. I love to talk about that. My son Logan is an incredible drummer. Incredible drummer.
Oh yeah. He rips it, man.
So good. He's so much better than I was at things like that at his age. And he knows where he wants to go in his endeavors. And I'm proud of him for that. Cause I thought I was going to be a baseball player, even though I only could strike out. So, for the opportunity to play with my son, I count that as one of the biggest blessings in the entire world. And I feel so much gratitude for that. And it's not how I would expect it to be. And it is not that I tell him, hey, Logan, I wrote a song. Come play with me on it. It's never like that, because he wants to do what he wants to do. And one thing I've had to learn with jamming with my son is for it to go well, I have to let him be the leader. I really have to step aside. I have guys I get to play with. They're my band. I love them. When I play with my son, my job is to just be his supporting guy. You know, if he wants to write a song, we write a song. If he wants to play a cover, we play a cover. I watched a great Victor Wooten TED Talk. Victor Wooten's a fantastic bass player, grew up with five older brothers. They wanted him to be the bass player. They tricked him into being the bass player very, very cleverly. But I learned with my son, I had to really just kind of put the language out there, you know, and then let him find out what he loved of the language, to learn to speak the way he wants to speak. And so I let him lead when we play. We play quite a bit. And I just feel so grateful for it. He keeps me young. I started playing punk rock guitar again and screaming again because that's what he likes to do. And so I'm just glad he lets me be included. We'll see how much longer that lasts. But he comes to me, he says, Dad, can we play? Can we write the song together? And I'm just go, God, I'm so lucky. You know,
That's so cool. That's so cool, man. That lights me up to hear that. I mean, for me, it's not music. It's martial arts that I feel that same level of passion that you do. And I envision those days that, you know, with my future kids that we're training and we're doing something cool. Like, and it's so awesome to see you doing that with Logan and to see like how talented he is and like how much, it's not just that he's skilled, but like he has this enthusiasm and this passion. Like I've seen him on your Instagram. It's just, it's inspiring to see.
It is very cool. He has something special. And I will say one thing I feel like I do right as a dad is, since I started playing music again, I work hard at music. I practice. I do the reps. I do the left-handed layups. I'm trying to get better all the time. And he hears me practice, and he practices. He goes up and he practices away. We took him to see Blink 182 two times in the last year. And it was the second concert of Blink 182 where he goes, that's what I want to be, just like Travis Barker. Like, I want to be like that guy. He doesn't want to be like his dad, and that's fine. But he's found his guy that he looks up to and feels moved by. And he wants to, you know, be that. And my drummer in my band actually came across a Travis Barker drumstick signed and gave it to my son very recently. And so, but he just lit up so much.
Oh my God. Yeah. That must've been a big moment for him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was huge. And as you become a father, you know, the thing I would advise is just do your bliss, emanate joy as you're doing the things that you love. Cause I think that they can't help but see it and be inspired by it. And that's the best thing we can do, is speak that language lovingly of whatever it is that we're passionate about and be around them and do it. And then whatever we're doing can become pretty, pretty compelling, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You live in the result, that you want to embody and that you want to pass on to your kids, it seems. And what it reminds me of, as we were talking about Marcus Aurelius, where he would talk about this idea, one of the lines in his book is, you know, waste no time talking about what a good man should be. Just be. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. That's yeah. So good.
And you're doing that with music. Like, you're embodying the craft and like what a musician is. Like, you're practicing, you're putting the work in. You have the curiosity, the enthusiasm, and the awe of like just learning and getting better. And that, I mean, that's one of the best lessons you could ever teach anyone, especially when they're kids.
100%. It's okay to suck at things and get mm-hmm. better. Like, yeah. No matter what age we are, it's okay to suck and get better. And I see you do that with the jiu-jitsu, man. I can't imagine having the balls and the wherewithal or the courage to get out there and lose and win and teach and learn, you know, and humble yourself. And I don't know. I'm inspired by you guys that do, guys and girls that do that.
Thank you, man. I mean, the jiu-jitsu journey has definitely been a deep one of self-reflection. I like to call it jiu-jitsu is, it's like a meditation with very instantaneous consequences. If you're not present, if you're not, you know, paying attention to what you're doing, like you're going to get choked out or you're going to get an arm lock or something like that. So, I mean, it is one of those things that just since I was a kid, martial arts has always been my jam. And I saw a lot of my friends who I used to train with as kids, like they left martial arts. And what I find really interesting, and I think you exemplify the opposite of what I'm about to say, but people will go into their adulthood and they'll make these rules for themselves of like who they need to be. And like, they got to let go of this childlike part of yourself. And it was actually Seneca that had this very profound line. He said, retain your youthful enthusiasm. You'll know how to use it better later in life.
Ooh, I love that.
And I feel like you do, like you live that, which is so cool. Like to pick something up in your 40s that people assume is something for, you know, that you can only do when you're young is inspiring. And it's not like picking something up in your 40s at the cost of like your other ambitions and business ambitions in life. It's like, no, you've done it integrating them together, which I think is such a powerful example for people, because one of the biggest problems I see with the people that I coach, the entrepreneurs that I work with, is they oftentimes, when by the time I've met them, they're doing well enough where they feel free in the sense of, okay, like I don't got to work for somebody else. Like I'm doing my thing. Like I can support myself. I can support my family. It's all good, but they're not having fun. They're not enjoying themselves and they're not enjoying the fruits of their labor, but it's not because they're not spending their money right. It's because they're not doing what's truly meaningful to them.
Mm. Yeah. I know that I struggled with that for years. Getting to a place where I was giving myself permission to do those things was a process. It was a long process. It was probably at least 5 years, you know, and I'm still trying to improve upon it. But I don't know why that is, that when we build this identity of a, you know, of an entrepreneur and a hustler and I came from nothing and I proved it to everybody I could be somebody, you know, there's something about the identity that was hard to give permission to just have fun, you know? And I'm glad that, you know, so many of the things I loved as a kid, I get to do now. I always loved running. I run like crazy. I run in the woods. I loved it as a kid. It's weird how those things, I don't think they leave you, you know? I love surfing. I started surfing a little while ago, not a lot, but I'll surf more, you know, same thing with the guitar and the music. It's those were things that I loved as like a 7 year old, just loved those things. And I don't think they ever leave. I mean, I think we can suppress them. I think we can suppress what we want to do to our detriment, but really they're always in there. And so I'm grateful I'm in a position where I get to do these things that I love. And I think that I probably would create that time. And who knows what anybody else should do, but creating the time to do what you love. I think we should all do it. I think we'd all be happier people.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely.
And better people. And we'd be more productive.
Yeah. I'm curious, like just you were already doing well in business before you pick music back up. What was like, what impact did it have on your actual business success or business productivity when you started giving yourself this gift of doing the things that you love again?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the things was that I really focused on being a creative force in my business, right? So one of the things I've always loved in my job, in the business that I own, is the product creation, ideation, design, marketing, all that stuff, the creative process. And so if I go straight from making music right into my, I call it the badge lab, where I do all my badge holder kind of creation and listing creation and things like that. Like, I go into that creative space and I work on things that create the most revenue I possibly can for the business, but I enjoy it. And I try to focus now only on creative endeavors in my business. Like, obviously there's other things to do. There's maintenance and things like that. But, being a creative force in the business, is where all the revenue comes from. It's where all the money comes from. Doing more of that and less of the other shit that I don't like, it's actually been helpful for my business.
Yeah, that's actually amazing. And I'm glad to see that you're still doing that. Cause I remember years ago we had this conversation where you and I were talking about business innovations and like innovations on products and, you know, creative solutions that you can create for your customers. And one thing was said in that conversation where we were talking about this idea that innovation does not happen when you are working. It happens when you're playing and creating. And yes, like, you took that and you ran with it. Like, you started getting things off of your plate that felt like work and started engaging in more things that actually felt like play. And yes, just like, not only were you enjoying yourself more, but like, the business was doing better. Like, people were happier in the business doing these things and working in this way. And it's fascinating how when we spend our time in satisfaction, joy, and fulfillment, it becomes contagious in the most positive, beautiful way to the people around us.
Yeah, it's contagious, man. Just like you said, it's so crazy to see how many people, like, when I walk around with a guitar, it's the silliest thing, but I love to practice now so much that I have a Tesla. I go supercharge it. I bring my guitar with me every time. And I just go walk around the streets and I play guitar. And the amount of people that wave or will pull me aside and be like, I've been meaning to write a book and I never do any writing. You're walking around practicing guitar. I should be doing I don't think I'm great at nothing, but I love the fact that when we show people, when we just get out there and just do stuff and have fun, it is contagious. And a lot of people want to have fun and want to create and want to do things that they want to do. They just don't do it, you know, but just seeing somebody else doing it, walking around looking silly or whatever it might be, you know, it's contagious.
Oh yeah. I think, what's really cool about it too, is it embodies this thing that I talk about in some of the coaching trainings that I facilitate, which is this idea of serving from an overflowing cup, where you are so fulfilled within on an emotional level because you're doing and living a life that is meaningful to you, that you have nothing left to do but to overflow and give to others and give inspiration and scale hope, as you described. And to me, it also reminds me of another quote, which is, ask not what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs are more people who are alive.
Yes.
and I think just walking around with your guitar is like, you're showing people like, hey, bitch, I'm alive.
It's so silly. Honestly, dude, like 4 or 5 years ago, I was scared as hell to sit down on a bench and play guitar. I thought people were looking at me. I thought they were judging me. When someone would walk by, it would make me really uncomfortable, you know? But it was just like, it was almost like this just exposure to discomfort, you know, and just doing it over and over. I was charging in my car yesterday in a parking garage, and I was singing at the top of my lungs while recording myself. That's not because I'm cool. It's because I realized how much fun it is to be a dork, you know, right, and just try to be alive. Like, it is so much fun. And somebody else is going to walk by, maybe 1 in 10, and be like, fuck, maybe I shouldn't be so damn scared. Like, that dude's making a fool of himself. Why not? You know?
That's awesome, man.
But I was scared as hell 5 years ago to do anything even close to what I'm doing now.
Well, I mean, that's the whole role that courage plays. It's like, you act in spite of the fear. It's not feeling fear. It's acting in spite of it. It's not caring what people think. It's caring what people think and still not allowing it to stop you. Mm. It's like, as human beings, like, we don't exist in the vacuum. As much as we'd like to tell ourselves, like, yeah, I'm my own person, and like, opinions of others don't matter. It's like, maybe, but maybe they do, because we don't exist in the vacuum. And you might consider the opinions and the thoughts and feelings of others. It's a matter of, do you allow it to stop you from being you? And that's mm-hmm. where courage plays that role. It's like, hey, I'm going to do the thing that I want to do because it's what allows me to feel alive.
Hell yeah. Is there anything that scares you, Victor? I don't think there is, but
anything that scares me, man, a few things. So years ago, I used to be very afraid to do karaoke. And now I will happily jump in front of a crowd of people that I've never met before and do karaoke. And I am not a singer by any stretch. I am a showman of sorts, right? So I'll pick songs that are crowd pleasers. But like today, yeah, like, I can go on a stage completely sober. I don't need like liquid courage or anything like that. Completely sober and just sing a Disney song at the top of my lungs and just make a whole awesome experience for the entire crowd out of it. My go-to karaoke song is Under the Sea, by the way.
Oh, so, that
crushes.
Can we go karaoke sometime?
Absolutely. I would love to do karaoke. It's on, dude.
It is on.
I feel like we'd have the best time.
Oh, he's so cool.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, stuff like that. Shit, like, doing martial arts, like competing in martial arts, has every time I do it, no matter how many times I've done it, it's always been scary, which mm-hmm. reminds me, it's, you know, with this conversation, it's inspiring me to maybe sign up for another competition at some point soon, right? Because it is scary. So, yeah, I mean, all kinds of things that scare me, but I've been very grateful for the courage to step in and do them anyway.
Hell yeah.
Amazing. Hell yeah. I got two more questions for you before we wrap up. The first one is, if people want to get to know Hydra Fighter, they want to listen to the music, where can they find you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Probably the best places would be on YouTube. If you just search Hydra Fighter, not Hydro Fighter, Hydra Fighter, two words, music, or Spotify. We've got some songs up there. We have a bunch more that are recorded that we're just going to start releasing. So we've got some pretty beautiful songs up there. Or if you're in Atlanta, come see a show. We're playing out a bit now.
Amazing. And my last question for you is, I like to ask this question. I like to give a little preface before I ask. So the Zen Stoic path is a path of liberation, but Zen Stoic philosophy is not liberation itself. It's merely a pointing mechanism. It's a way of getting there. And so on these interviews, I like to go outside of the bounds of Zen Stoic and go into people who are living a life that I think is exemplary of liberation, meaning that they're living a life where they feel truly alive. They're doing what matters to them. So for you, what does it mean to live a liberated life?
Oh, wow. What does it mean to live a liberated life? I would say one, what's coming to my brain is just optimizing for joy. Optimizing for joy and prioritizing connection, you know, because this isn't about facing the world alone. This is about facing the world with those you love and connecting, just connecting deeply. And then asking for help when you need it. We did a liberation session, you and I together. And so many old stories I had that were causing me deep pain and guilt, I was able to let go of those and see things that I'd always seen one way in a completely different light. And it changed my relationship with my mother in the most beautiful way. She would have had her birthday yesterday. She would have been 72. And in all of our last conversations, I was able to just enjoy the beauty of who she was. And to me, that's a huge part of the liberation, not just me feeling joy or feeling connected with those around me, but to really let go of stupid old stories that caused me pain unnecessarily, you know, and rebuild connections and love, with the people I love the most. And just transform. Like, there's so much transforming that needed to happen, and there's still transforming that needs to happen. And that came from, I guess, the freedom. The liberation is like the freedom from the bondage of self, you know, or the bondage of stupid old stories that needed to change and shift. So, long-winded roundabout answer, but all those are important to me.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you for that answer, for the beautiful words, and for showing up and doing the work for yourself to experience that liberation, to experience that transformation in your relationship with your mom. I mean, I remember when you first told me that a couple of years ago, and it just warmed my heart to hear that. And I love your answer. It's optimizing for joy and embracing connection, and like, that will lead you to your liberation.
Sounds about right. You always articulate things so much better. You grab things from my rambling and make them exquisite.
Amazing. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show, man. This has been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. It's been a long time coming, and I really, really enjoyed this conversation. I know it will inspire those who listen to it.
The honor was mine, my friend. Thank you so much, Victor.
Thank you.
Love you, dude.
Love you too, man.